From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A proposal in the Florida legislature would change how complaints can be made about law enforcement officers, but some police are opposed to the move.
It will significantly impede and impair the ability to hold officers accountable and to ensure the community has access to all relevant records regarding officer conduct.
Also this week, traditional public schools worry as more kids use Florida's school choice program to attend private schools, their bottom lines could be in trouble.
But that's a choice for the family, and that's a choice that we as a legislature elected to make several years ago.
There's a lot of talk lately about tariffs, but what does it all mean for Floridians and their pocketbooks?
Floridians are getting more pessimistic about their financial conditions over the next year and the next 5 years. That can hurt consumer spending, which is a key driver of the Florida economy.
I'm Regan McCarthy. This is Capitol Report.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com.
A proposal is moving forward in the Florida House that would keep officers from being interrogated for wrongdoing unless a complaint is made under oath. The measure also bars some complaints from going into an officer's personnel file. WFSU's Tristan Wood reports the Florida Police Chiefs Association opposes the move.
Hialeah Republican Representative Tom Fabricio says his bill is about protecting officers who are the subject of false complaints.
It requires all complaints to be in writing and signed under oath, preventing anonymous accusations. Officers must receive a copy of the complaint and supporting evidence before any interrogation or disciplinary action. Additionally, if an investigation results in no discipline, it cannot be included in the officer's personnel file or used to deny promotions or commendations.
But his bill is facing opposition from the Florida Police Chiefs Association. Jennifer Pritt, the association's director, recounted her experience being sexually assaulted by a senior officer when she first started working in law enforcement. She says she was believed because anonymous complaints from other women about the officer were in his file.
There had been other women, not cops, that had reported inappropriate behavior by this commander. Nothing that had ever stuck, of course. Things that couldn't be sustained, but things that were in his file that suggested there might be a problem. That's why they asked me if I was going to sue. If you pass this bill, if any one of these women had come forward and wished to remain anonymous, the agency I worked for then would not have been able to investigate these allegations. Without these prior past bad acts, I'm not sure I would have been believed.
Tallahassee Police Chief Lawrence Revel is also the third vice president of the FPCA. He says the law would harm accountability in the hiring process, as well as stifle anonymous reporting efforts. He thinks that could harm community trust in law enforcement.
Because it will significantly impede and impair the ability to hold officers accountable and to ensure the community has access to all relevant records regarding officer conduct.
The bill passed its committee stop, but had some Republican dissenters. Tampa Republican Representative Susan Valdez says anonymous reporting is critical to protect victims from retaliation.
And no matter what profession, there should be a spot where people can honestly say that this is something is happening and it needs to be investigated and protect that individual, that victim.
But Palatka Republican Representative Judson Sapp supports the bill. He says he thinks relying on anonymous sources is wrong.
Philosophically, I'm going to go with a yes on this because I do believe you have ultimately in this country should have a right to face your accuser, and your career should not be ruined without the ability to defend yourself and talk back about it and say where it's at. So I'm a yes.
While the bill has passed its second House committee, the Senate version hasn't moved at all yet. That could spell trouble for the likelihood it will pass this year. For WFSU News, I'm Tristan Wood.
Back in 2023, the legislature approved what is often called universal school choice, which removed income as a qualification for school choice vouchers and made private school more affordable for many more Floridians. But it's also reduced enrollment in public school districts, which receive less funding as a result. Margie Menzel reports now traditional public schools are worried about their funding for the upcoming year.
The Senate has approved a budget that its leaders say will do a better job of having the money follow the student. That's roughly $9,000 per student per year. It can go to private schools, charter schools, public schools, or home schools. But as more families take advantage of the state's school choice programs to help their kids attend private schools, traditional public schools are seeing fewer dollars.
The reflection of the budget is a reflection of the fact that there is, in fact, a reduction in enrollment in the districts based upon the growing number of students and families that are choosing universal school choice.
That's Zephyr Hills Republican Senator Danny Burgess. He's in charge of the section of the Senate's budget on pre-K through 12 schools.
But that's a choice for the family, and that's a choice that we as a legislature elected to make several years ago. And so the budget is simply a reflection, not a reduction or an offset, so as much as it is a reflection of where the students are actually going.
Burgess says the Senate's pre-K through 12 budget proposal is $34.7 billion. The Family Empowerment Scholarships, the major voucher program signed into law 2 years ago, is earmarked for $4 billion, a $700 million increase. This session, lawmakers are trying to fix some flaws in the funding formula. The funding is supposed to follow the students, but the students often shift from one type of school to another. For instance, many students have been changing their minds in mid-year, which could mean that a private school gets the money, but the student goes back to public school without the money following. But some Democrats say the fix won't do enough. Orlando Democratic Senator Carlos Guillermo Smith notes that the inflation rate in Florida is higher than the proposed increase per student in the Senate budget. He says traditional public schools need more money.
Do you consider inflation? Because my understanding is that the inflation rate in Florida is 2.7%. So if we're simply going to keep up with costs compared to the previous year as it relates to inflation, the 1.5% base student allocation increase doesn't even cover inflation.
It's a concern for Leon County School Superintendent Rocky Hanna as well. During a recent school board meeting, he said the numbers are keeping him up at night. He says that students use the state's school choice options to help pay for private school instead of attending traditional public schools, the Leon School District's budget is taking a hit.
And scholarship program in Leon County alone is going to gain 880 students next year. So we'll be down around 500 students in their projection times, you know, $8,000 is $4 million.
And while he says lawmakers are considering an increase, he worries it won't go far. The House budget includes a $50 raise per student and the Senate budget a $66 raise per student. He says the Leon County Sheriff's Office, which provides security to the schools, will require more money in the upcoming year. Nurses and food services will require increases. And there are also higher costs for fuel.
I don't know that I've ever seen it this bad, I'm being bluntly honest. And I am really scared when I talk about keep me up at night, that we may be overextended in the number of people that we're bringing back in the fall. That's how scared I am.
Hanna says he's nervous about what's to come. I'm Margie Menzel.
Escalating tariffs, a global trade war, and a volatile stock market have many people worried about the economy and their paychecks. But what might it all mean to Floridians? WLRN's Tom Hudson and Christine DiMatte help sort through the noise.
Let's start with the tariffs and Florida. How will these tariffs affect us here?
If they go into effect after the 90-day pause announced by President Trump, there are two ways they'll affect Florida: consumer prices and imports. Now, a tariff, Chris, remember, is a tax on something that's imported. It raises the cost of that item. Last weekend, for instance, I bought a new pair of shoes. Now, they were on sale for about $100. They were made in Vietnam. It was stamped right there on the inside of the tongue. Now, under President Trump's tariffs, it would cost 46% more to import those shoes from Vietnam to Miami, where I bought them. Odds are that some of that tax would wind up in the retail price I paid, and this is how tariffs may affect consumer prices. Another impact here may be on the business of importing. There are 16 seaports here in Florida. The bigger ones are on the Atlantic coast, Port Miami, Port Everglades, of course, here in South Florida, and Jacksport in Jacksonville. Now, higher tariffs will mean more expensive imported products, which may cool demand and lead to a drop in imports. That would affect business on and through the ports. One source in real estate shared with me that there's now new worries about how the value of warehouses could be hurt by a drop in imports.
Tom, what Florida industries may feel the tariffs most?
Real estate overall, and construction particularly. The cost of Italian tiles for a bathroom renovation, for instance, or imported wood from Canada, drywall from Mexico. If the prices of these go up, the prices of new homes may be pushed up. Tourism could be hurt. If people don't have as much money or are worried about their jobs, they may curtail travel. And tourism here, as we know, is so important to the overall hospitality economy, like hotels and restaurants. And with consumer spending under pressure, retail jobs would be under pressure, too.
How have the stocks of Florida companies performed during all the ups and downs, mostly downs, of the stock market?
Hold on. It has been a roller coaster, and not for the faint of heart. Among the biggest losers in the days after the tariffs were announced was NextEra Energy. That's the parent company of the largest electricity company in the state, FPL. Now, utilities like electric companies usually are seen as a port in the storm of a stock market sell-off because people will still be using electricity. For-profit prison operator Geo Group, that's based in Boca Raton, also fell in the sell-off, but rebounded after President Trump announced he was pausing the tariffs, except for those against Chinese goods. The stock of air conditioning maker Carrier regained most of what it lost in the days after the tariff announcement. It makes AC units here in the U.S. and also Mexico and other places. And then cruise ship operators like Carnival, Norwegian, and Royal Caribbean, they saw big waves of selling, then big waves of buying. The worries here are that consumer spending will be sapped by the new tariffs, and without the tariffs, people will crowd onto cruise ships.
So what kind of shape is the Florida economy in?
Yeah, it's pretty good. The job market is fairly strong. Inflation has been falling. But, you know, consumers also have been getting more anxious. Now, on the job front, Miami-Dade County had the lowest unemployment rate in the state in February at 2.6%. That's a very low number. The South Florida jobless rate was 3.2%, and that's lower than the state and national rates.
Tom, you mentioned that consumers are more anxious. Please tell us more about that.
The University of Florida surveys Florida consumers every month. It's called the Consumer Sentiment, and it fell sharply in February and March by more than it fell in the first month of the COVID-19 pandemic. And it also fell across age groups and across income groups. Everybody was getting more worried. Floridians are getting more pessimistic about their financial conditions over the next year and the next 5 years. That can hurt consumer spending, which is a key driver of the Florida economy.
So consumers are more worried, but the job market is strong. How about wages and inflation?
Average hourly wages across the state were up about 6% in February compared to a year ago. And that's not adjusted for seasonal variations, but it is a strong number. And inflation in Miami, for instance, rose 2.9% last month. That's up from last summer. So there are signs that price trends are picking up as well as wages.
Back to tariffs then. What could they mean for inflation?
Well, tariffs are a price shock if they're passed through all at once. Inflation is the sustained increase in general prices. Regardless if tariffs are a one-time price increase or are phased in and raise inflation, it results in higher prices, like that pair of shoes made in Vietnam that I bought in Miami just a few days ago.
That was WLRN Senior Economics Editor Tom Hudson. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm Christine DiMatte.
Federal lawmakers want to repeal a provision within the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, that's designed to serve working families. As WUSF's Gabriella Paul reports, it allows higher-earning families in high-cost areas to get food assistance.
The provision takes into account how much a family spends on housing, energy, and medical costs in addition to their household income. If federal lawmakers eliminate the 1996 law, it would specifically hurt families who are above the income threshold but still struggle to put food on the table. Carolyn Vega is with the hunger relief organization Share Our Strength. She says it's ironic the proposed changes are in the name of government efficiency.
There are a lot of proposals on the table right now that would dramatically increase red tape and make it a lot harder for families to access the benefits they need to put food on the table and dramatically increase the burden for schools and states.
Vega says the changes would cause more families to cycle on and off of SNAP more frequently.
And Florida's citrus industry saw a slight improvement as the U.S. Department of Agriculture released an updated production forecast for the soon-to-be-completed growing season. The forecast kept estimates of oranges the same as in a March projection, but the production forecast for grapefruit, tangerine, and mandarins increased in this week's numbers. While the new forecast showed a small uptick, the 2024-2025 growing season will have historically low production as growers continue to battle deadly citrus greening disease and damage from hurricanes. Still to come on Capitol Report. We'll hear about a plan to protect state parks from development like golf courses and pickleball courts.
Our state parks are more than just beautiful places to visit. They are classrooms without walls, sanctuaries for all wildlife, and also sanctuaries for people, too.
It's alligator nesting season. These animals don't typically attack, but they can become more aggressive this time of year. Experts say the solution is simple. Avoid them.
You stay away from the water and you'll be safe. Same thing, if you stay out of the ocean, you'll never be bitten by a shark, right?
And there's a new registration system aimed at getting more Floridians to become organ donors.
And whenever your time in this world is done, that gift of love and life will deepen your own legacy.
After a failed proposal to build hotels and resorts in several Florida state parks, lawmakers are proposing legislation to help protect the parks from such development in the future. Adrian Andrews tells us more.
Pickleball courts, hotels, and golf courses. Those were among the list of amenities considered in last year's proposal dubbed the Great Outdoors Initiative. The proposal from Governor Ron DeSantis' administration said the plan would expand outdoor recreation and lodging in 9 state parks across Florida, including Grayton Beach and Camp Helen near Panama City. But the governor says he never approved the proposal, which he says was not ready for prime time.
So this was something that was leaked. It was not approved by me. I never saw that. They're going back to the drawing board. Talk to your local communities.
Lawmakers in the House this session want to help protect the parks in the future. Stewart Republican Representative John Snyder has a measure he says would do just that. He says it
seeks to limit development within our state parks and ensure anytime there is a change to our state land management plan that there is maximum public participation.
His measure, which passed all its committees and is being taken up on the House floor, works to preserve state land by limiting new development. It also requires public hearings for all future park plans and creates a special advisory panel that will report back to the legislature. The proposal has support from advocates for state parks who say the proposed developments could have had negative environmental impacts on fragile and protected areas. Eve Samples, the executive director of Friends of the Everglades, says legislation was needed to protect all state parks.
Floridians love state parks. They love the access to nature they provide. They love the solitude. They did not love the proposals that emerged last summer to develop our state parks with harmful development like golf courses and lodges. That was clear last summer when tens of thousands of people banded together to oppose those changes.
Snyder's proposal underwent some changes, mainly to the bill's language that allowed construction to happen in state parks as long as it didn't cause substantial harm. That line was removed in committee to clarify that state parks can only be used for recreational use and prohibits constructing new facilities like hotels and golf courses on them. Representative Anna Escamani, a Democrat from Orlando, sided with the changes.
Our state parks are more than just beautiful places to visit. They are classrooms without walls, sanctuaries for all wildlife, and also sanctuaries for people, too.
The House's proposal would go into effect this July. As for the Senate version, it's only seen one committee. Wachula's Republican Senate President Ben Albritton last month said he supports protecting state parks. When asked whether the Senate will approve such a bill, Albritton responded with,
"I'm certainly supportive of making sure that we're protecting our state parks and that we are showing Floridians that, you know, this natural space matters."
I'm Adrian Andrews.
Florida is home to more than 1 million alligators, and they can be found in all 67 counties. So the chances you could see an alligator are pretty high. And now it's that time of year again, alligator breeding season. It starts in early April and runs through June. Female alligators guard their nests fiercely, protecting them from predators. But that protective instinct can sometimes lead to dangerous encounters. WLRN's Amy Sanchez spoke with Joe Wazalewski, a wildlife expert at the University of Florida's Fort Lauderdale Research and Education Center.
Typically, alligators are not going to attack people. The nesting season does exacerbate that particular feeling because of how aggressively the females will guard the nest. And if you're in an HOA and you're walking on a, let's say, a nature path, and there's an alligator nest nearby, she's going to defend it. But typically, they have this, whatever their radius is, that they're going to protect, and then they stay right there. So some claim that alligators can run 20 miles an hour. I've heard as much as 35 miles an hour. Let me tell you, if there's an alligator behind you, you're going to be faster than it.
But are there any other things that people should not do if they see an alligator?
Most attacks that I know of have occurred with people going into waterways that are inhabited by alligators, and especially waterways where people have fed the alligators, which is not legal, by the way. And as soon as the alligators fed more than once, they become accustomed to people and they will view people as a feeding platform, and they'll actually come up to people. And that's when they're dangerous, when they lose their fear of people.
What roles do alligators play in Florida's ecosystem?
South Florida, in particular, has a wet and a dry season. And in the dry season, the entire Everglades literally dries up. There's no water, surface water, I should say. Well, historically, alligators are like the beavers of the Everglades. And in the dry season, they begin sloshing out a hole. And over time, this hole, we call them a gator hole, can be 50 feet across and several feet deep. And when the water begins to recede as the dry season begins, all of the aquatic wildlife go to these gator holes, and the gator holes sustain life until the rains come. And then when the rains come and the Everglades fills back up, everything disperses. So alligators are engineers of the Everglades. They're top predators. They have a serious role in the ecology everywhere they're found.
Are there any other misconceptions about alligators in general, or maybe even fun facts that people just don't know about?
I can say, as a biologist that has studied alligators and crocodiles for over 40 years, not only myself, but many biologists are having a different viewpoint. Before, we used to think that they were just cold-blooded killers out wait to kill anything. And now we're seeing there's quite an intricate social arrangement in a lake with alligators. And when I say alligators, I mean alligators and crocs. They're very similar in that way. And they are excellent parents. So they have a lot more detailed social system than we know. And they are, believe it or not, loving parents. And the courtship and breeding is actually very tender to watch.
Is there anything else that you would like to add that you think I should know, or anything you think I might have missed?
There's a lot of people moving into Florida that really, if you come from up north, you have no concept of alligators. And people just don't know how to act around them or live with them. So just a couple of basic things I'd like to tell you is stay out of the water, dusk and dawn. I personally wouldn't swim in any body of water that had crocodilians in it. But dusk and dawn is the worst time to go in because that's when they're active. Dogs are prey for these animals. So I would warn anybody that's walking their dogs to stay away from the water edge, unless the lake is deemed safe from alligators. You stay away from the water and you'll be safe. Same thing, if you stay out of the ocean, you'll never be bitten by a shark, right?
That was wildlife expert Joe Wasilewski speaking with WLRN's Amy Sanchez about wildlife nesting season. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Regan McCarthy. Finally this week, Florida has a new statewide organ donor registration system. Tom Flanagan reports the personal tragedy of a Tallahassee family has become a major driver for the initiative.
Ron Sachs is the well-known founder of a Capital City communications firm. But he says even more than his professional accomplishments, he's always been proud of his kids.
Well, Amy was the middle of my three daughters, Amy Nicole Sachs. She was tiny, she was premature, 4'10", 100 pounds as a grown woman. But she had a passion for journalism and a passion for sports.
That passion even led to a stint in Atlanta where Amy reported baseball for MLB.com. Then this young and vibrant woman had a stroke. Then another one.
And it plunged her in a thing called locked-in syndrome, where she was on a ventilator. She could not move. She was essentially paralyzed, but could think and have emotion. But the only action or motion of her body she had any control over was the blinking of her eyes.
Ron Sachs said Amy's prognosis was grim.
And I told her that if you want to live like this, people do it, and we'll help in every way we can. But if you don't want to live like this, let me know by shutting your eyes. And she instantly shut her eyes. And then I said, you know, ever since you're 16, you have it on your driver's license that you want to be an organ donor. If you're choosing to lead this life, do you want to be an organ donor? And she shut her eyes again.
Amy Nicole Sachs died the last day in May of 2023. She was just 38 years old. But her dad says her organ donations made it possible for some other folks to live.
Two young men received her kidneys in their 20s and are alive today because of her. And a young mom in her early 40s with two teenage boys and a husband received Amy's liver.
Sachs says he's in regular touch with these organ recipients, who he essentially considers part of his family. Typically, he says as many as 8 people benefit from a single organ donor. Right now, more than 5,000 Floridians are on the wait list for donated organs. And since fewer than 2 out of 5 Florida drivers sign up as a donor when they get their driver license, Sachs is helping promote the Donate Life Florida registration initiative.
And whenever your time in this world is done, that gift of love and life will deepen your own legacy.
Find out more about the Organ Donor Registry at WFSU.org. I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Tom Flanagan, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Tom Hudson, Christine DiMatte, and Amy Sanchez. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi. I'm Regan McCarthy. Join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.